Live from the Regis Suites in Peoria, Arizona, this is the Breakthrough Thinking Broadcasting Network, and the show is Get On To It, starring none other than Donald Williams. Don, how are you?
Hello, this is Don Williams, and this is Get On To It.
And I love the title, Get On To It. It's sort of, as we said in the 60s, a groovy term, or maybe that was with Austin Powers, I don't know. Didn't he say that?
It's catchy. Groovy?
He did.
It says what we're trying to get people to do, get involved and get on to something different.
Yeah,
and get going and take action.
Very important, especially these days where people seem to be sort of stuck. And frustration often, Don, leads to inactivity or an inaction. People get so frustrated that sometimes they shut down. Other people actually step it up. But I think the majority of people get sort of paralyzed and you know, through emotion, and they just don't know what to do, they don't know how to do it, and they just get stuck until they can process through.
Well, one of the challenges that people face, because when they're younger, they're so focused on hows, they think that everything in life has a how. But that's not the way really life works. It is a focus of why. You know, in nature, everything has some intention, and you know it's driven by why it wants to do what it wants to do, and it finds a way. And when we're focusing on the how, we're focusing on something that we have to figure out. It's a curiosity of a journey. So when we talk about today's topic, you know, we first look at the word introspection, and that's examining things with self-honesty. And being able to be real with what may be happening versus what we want to have happen. So often we get stuck in the wanting something, and we focus in on the lack. And then that lack just seems to be more lack because that's all we're thinking of. And with a business, introspection is being able to be honest and say, what is it that we're trying to accomplish, and what are we really not doing to help that accomplishment take place, whether with our employees or with serving our customers in general.
Yeah, there's no question about it. And I think it's an important topic because there's so many businesses these days. That's what America's sort of built on, especially small business. But big business, this topic is extremely important. Now, the big businesses, they understand strategic planning. They understand corporate culture. They just aren't very good at implementing it often, and they may go through the motions. However, with this topic, they can learn a lot more. The business introspection is really, like you said, but it's really going deep within oneself to understand the limitations, the way I see it, the self-imposed limitations, and also perhaps the ego, perhaps things that might isolate a leader and design the corporate culture to serve that leader. That shouldn't be corporate culture.
And the challenge with that is they're trying to front load a legacy. They're trying to create something before it really has given enough reason to create the allure of wow. You know, they're trying to, and that's why I mean front load it. And success has to be an example, and that has to be the proof and evidence. And some people who rise into a role of leadership all of a sudden thinks because they're the leader, they can create this legacy before the legacy has ever had a chance to have happen. And that derails things because there's no evidence to what they're wanting to do is proof. And that's where the self-honesty comes in.
Yeah, there's no doubt. And, you know, it reminds me, Don, as you're talking, of the Peter Principle. It may be before your time, a well-known book where people reach their level of incompetency. And sadly, this is what happens. Leaders don't usually understand at what point they reach that level, but it's important to understand it because as you grow, at a certain point, you may reach your level of incompetency unless perhaps you have good introspection. And you really dig deep and understand the self-imposed limitations or any sabotage type of activity or the ego. But if you understand that, then you might never, ever reach your level of incompetence. And that's very important.
So we take what we talked about first, the purpose and the why, and the introspection with regards to being able to see where we are as a leader. And the why aspect comes in, if you are trying to lead so that the people that are underneath you can take your position one day, then you're going to create a culture in which people can connect with. But often, corporate America has moved into this ideal that everyone underneath me is here to serve me instead of work with me so that I can bring them up to take my place. And that's where the silent friction comes from.
I totally agree. The way I see that, I just say it a little differently, is most people are guarding their turf, and they protect their boundaries, their turf. And I've seen people get fired for that very thing when there's a superstar coming up and it's threatening to the boss. It should be exciting to the boss. It mm-hmm. should be encouraged to go as high and wide and deep and far as you can. And in the corporate culture these days, not many people have the self-esteem
yes.
to be able to do that.
And that has to do with exactly that point, is you need to reach a level of clarity with that why, so that your self-esteem and honesty are consistent, and you're not kind of facing the shadow of what you think you're trying to accomplish. When you're mentioning a person who is a leader and they're in that phase where they have difficulty recognizing skills, that is actually going to hold themselves back because they're not going to be able to grow, and they're also going to hold back anybody else in the department who could grow from that situation.
Yeah, there's no question. And it gets more, I think, complex the bigger the company. However, it's just as significant even in, believe it or not, a one-person shop. Because you're only going to grow as much as you can grow inside.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can't make that leap or go inward and really know how. I mean, the why is really critical, like you started the show. You know, what's the purpose? And that's usually what strategic planning is about. Is understanding, you know, why are we here? What do we do? Who are we?
And being able to examine, what have we been doing that's working?
Yeah.
And what have we been doing that has not been working? And when you mentioned communication, especially with regards to the multiple departments that can be in some companies, or even just a small company, is the ability to communicate what's really important and to be able to do so in an atmosphere that's open and willing to have that discussion.
Yeah, there's no question about that. And I think it's a big topic. So many people don't understand, you know, how the corporate culture impacts with their employees and their vendors and their customers.
And the step back from this, if a person thinks about just a general relationship, when two people meet, there's what I call the third identity that's created. That's their own particular chemistry that they relate to each other through. It's always unique between people. Well, with a company, that has to be the same way that everyone who works for that company connects to that company. They have to share the same mutual identity when they go into the job role and in that job function. And they have to kind of align themselves with that vision and see their part in it. Otherwise, they're just going about their day and they're not really helping promote the overall purpose of the company. And I think that's a tangible difficulty in the current era, largely because the feeling that the company cares for the employees and is a company that is there more like a family, because you spend as much time at work and for some people even more so than their own family. And that used to be the way that, at least in America, it was seen as the way to conduct business. Now, instead of a personnel department where it was a personal connection, now HR is taking on the human resource, and people are seen and feel more like a desk or computer, and what they say when they're being honest and trying to be helpful is often pushed to the side. And that's where that honesty comes in. Can we have that discussion where someone has something that needs to be said? We need to pay attention to it. Will we listen to it? And the downside to HR is that it's almost been, let's protect the company against the people who are the employees of the company, instead of representing the people in the company and trying to promote the growth that could be possible. Because people go through all these hoops and various tests to get to be employed by the company. And then it's almost a shame because now you're put in this position and this is your role, and then we're going to forget everything you did to get here. And now you've got to prove yourself again. And it's kind of ridiculous because there are so many skills that people have that the company actually has turned a blind eye to, and they're not tapping it.
Well, a recent example that I just heard, actually, I think it was about 2 days ago, actually, Amazon, I believe it's Amazon, that is now implementing a policy, I believe 20 weeks time paid off once you deliver a baby.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's 6 weeks for the husband or the partner. And so there's a slight shift,
mm-hmm,
in the culture there to honor the person,
mm-hmm,
more than just a number. I was going to say profit, but if you think about that, a great corporate culture can generate way more profits,
mm-hmm,
when people are productive and happy.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a pretty interesting shift. It'll be interesting how many companies attempt to follow that, but you gotta have such strong systems and a strong corporate culture to do that. And the why is important. Do you really honor it, or are you just trying to do a copycat and without thinking it through?
Are you doing it to weather opinion and follow a theory because you think it feels good, or do you have evidence that you can show, given your culture, that it actually matches with the culture?
Yeah, so I think that's really interesting. But let's take a quick break right now. When we come back, we'll talk more about business introspection. So you CEOs out there, you owners, you managers, networks, get on to it, starring Don Williams. You know, I called you Don this time rather than Donald because there's a great country western singer named Don Williams.
So I've heard.
Some great songs, by the way.
Yeah, well known.
Yeah, very, very good. And we're talking about business introspection. Very critical if you want a successful business, if you want to be a successful leader, and if you want to be a successful employee. It doesn't matter. And then we could even extend it beyond that. It's not the topic, but a successful husband, a successful person, Whatever it is.
That's how Get Onto It works, right? We recognize that all this, what you do one way, you do everything, and it runs all throughout your life, health, wealth, relationships. So we're just focusing in on how wealth or business or success relating to business can be affected by doing something we would apply to ourselves. And if a company culture was to instigate something along these lines, a good hand-in-hand would be that each individual who would be working for the company would have their own personal introspection to help focus on their own life and what they're bringing into the experience of the job.
There's no doubt. The first segment, and of course you can hear a replay on breakradioshow.com, under Archives, look under Get Onto It and play this again because it's a great educational piece. We did talk about corporate culture. Now we're going to talk about team building and introspection. Really important because it's so important to have a great team. You look in athletics, Don, and let's put it this way. A great team with good players can beat a great team with superstars. It depends on the team play. So if you have superstars that aren't quite cohesive as a team, they can easily lose to a great team without superstars. And you look at all the great companies, they're coordinated. They're looking out for each other. They're uplifting each other. They're motivating each other. And the only way you can do that, I believe, is you got to know yourself. As you know yourself, you're going to know others, and you're going to build your self-esteem to encourage people to be their best.
And a good example of this would be a project team, because that's something that the average person would be connected in with. And when I first worked as an engineer, and engineers typically, and engineering firms, they all have some sort of project teams. One of the things that I noticed is they would introduce, say, hello, this is such and such, and this is their role or title, and that was the end of it. And then you'd have the conversation or whatever the topic was for that particular meeting, and people go along the way. And I always thought to myself, there's something seriously missing here. That person really does, nobody really knows what anybody else is really doing based off of a title. And that comes in with your own definition and concept of what that means to you. What does that mean to the company or to the greater whole of what the company is trying to accomplish? And one of the things that I would suggest people to do is to take time to go and meet each of the members of their group, to discuss what they know their job to be, what they've been doing, and what the other person's function is, and that how those functions interrelate and what they need from each other. That type of thing just never happens in a meeting and is seldom a course of action that anybody takes, because they all just like run back to their little spaces, their little cubicles, and they get back into work because it's, you know, we spent so much time in the meeting, blah, 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 blah.
What you're saying, and I've seen it so often, is people take the first position, which is their self-interest, and they look out from that usually. Now, in neuro-linguistic programming, they have a concept called the three perceptual positions. It's actually more than that, but the three is yourself, mm-hmm. the person you're interacting with, and the third one is the observer position. And there's some really nice techniques to be able to look at it from yourself, look at it from the other side's point of view, and look at it as an observer position for the purpose to gather information and gain insight on things maybe you didn't think of by just looking at your first position.
Now, see, I'm not trained in NLP, but the only important perspective actually is the observer mode. And the reason I say that is this. There's a lot of confusion when we go to a job, why we're at the job, right? It goes back to the why. And we all are doing it for reasons because we have to pay bills, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Well, if you go into the position that you're going to for work and saying, I'm here to serve others, that's my function, that's my why, then you would be able to maintain an observer point of view because you'll always be looking for a better opportunity to serve others. It's a natural outflow of that point of view.
You know, that I like what you just said, serve others, because if you think about it, if everyone in your company had that attitude, that would be a magnificent company.
Well, if you look at every employee is a type of, and anybody you're interacting with just in general life is a customer. You're always bringing value to a situation. How you're valued and the values that you have are reflected in the ability for that service to connect with somebody else. That's just with personal interactions. If you take that in a job point of view, with a focus where everybody's service should know it's working with the customer, working with whatever product or service, and being able to drill into what it actually is that everyone needs to be focusing on, then they know that if I'm doing my job, I'm serving my fellow employees. And when I'm serving my fellow employees, we're going to be able to serve my customer more. And that's where what you made an excellent point to with regards to this self-serving point of view, and that's where the challenge of the leader that we were speaking of earlier comes in, because they think, for whatever reason, that they have to promote their position to maintain their position.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I like what you said, the internal customers, because that's a very popular management perspective these days, is that within the organization, whoever's in there are customers, and you treat them as customers as you would outside customers. That's important. And what I heard this a long time ago, this concept of self-serving versus serving others. And the example they gave was heaven and hell. And you may have heard this before. So if you look at it, in hell, everyone was at this big table, and there's plenty of food. I mean, the best delectable food you can imagine. But everyone was starving.
Mm-hmm.
And you look at it, you go, how is that possible with all this delicious food? And then you look at heaven, it's the same table with the same food, and everyone's nourished and fulfilled and content and happy. So what was the difference?
Well, the way I would see the difference is in heaven, there's an abundant mentality. They're willing to pass it around. Whereas in hell, there is a scarcity mentality, and it's all about controlling whatever resource there is.
And that's a great answer, and that is a true answer. But the moral to this particular story is that the utensils they had were 6 feet long. So they couldn't actually serve themselves because they had to grab the utensils, and 6 feet long, you couldn't get it to your mouth. In hell, they always tried to get it to their own mouth. In heaven, they fed others. Give me some five on that one.
That's awesome.
That's a good one, right? Yeah. And it makes sense. That's a perfect example of what you were saying, serving others. And that really is reflective in the two concepts. And you had the attitudes right on anyway.
Yeah.
But that's the visual example of what we're talking about. So I think if people really take this to heart, they'll understand and take this metaphor and apply it to their own business. And it's a continuous process.
Well, the problem with service to self, which is what the way I frame it, is that it has the tendency to become parasitic and leaning on others to do the job, and there's a vacuum sort of created with that mentality where you start not following through on your own responsibilities because you think, you know, whatever position you're in, it's due to you. Whereas service to others is just like, hey, you know, if I help you and you help me, we're going to get along and go a lot further. And if I know what your needs are, that way I can be more efficient when I'm doing my work. I pass it off to you. We don't have to go back and forth. It makes things more comfortable because everyone knows why everyone else is there versus wondering, you know, are we really here to help ourselves or help the customer?
Yeah, there's
And the ego can get dropped out.
Yeah, very, very important. Let's take another quick break, and when we come back, we'll talk about productivity. Business introspection affects productivity. And after all, that is so important in life, in business, profitability, contentment, you name it. This is critical. And this is Get On To It, live from the Regis Suites in Peoria, Arizona. We'll be right back. And welcome back again. You're listening to Breakthrough Thinking Broadcasting Network's Get On To It, starring Donald Williams. I've changed his name to protect the innocent. No, it was Don. It was Donald. What do you like to be called?
I prefer Don.
Okay.
I don't know what it was when I was younger. You know, you get that that Donnie thing that, you know, the kids, you know, they always throw the Donnie or the IE or the Y type thing. And my grandma would always spell it with the IE, and that drove me nuts.
Really?
Because I thought that was kind of girlish. I thought the Y was more of a male thing.
I think it is.
And I just got kind of sick of it. I said, just make it Don. It made it real easy.
Yeah, but you wouldn't mind if Marie was with you. That's how I'm thinking about it. So I'll admit it. Greg will hate it. But I love Donnie and Marie. I just love them. I go and watch them and let the dogs out. I mean, they're super talents. They really are. They're sort of the old time. If you look at watch them in Las Vegas at the Flamingo, it's that old style because they were little when they perform with like Andy Williams, Frank Sinatra. That old style, but they remember it, and that's why they're back in Vegas with this intimate auditorium, not auditorium, but showroom, and it's really cool. So I always enjoyed them, but that's my story. Cool. I'm sticking to it.
You're good, good. You should always stick to your story. That way you're being true to yourself.
Exactly. Now, so we did talk about the first segment, corporate culture. Very important, no question. This is business introspection. Team building, we talked about. Let's talk a bit about productivity in this segment as it relates to business introspection. And really, to me, you know, if you look at productivity, what's the there's so many things that go into that. The first thing that comes to my mind is pride in your work from a non-ego standpoint. And obviously, if it's a recipe, you add skill level, you add attitude, you add really your belief systems.
What I find is actually that holds most people back is creativity. And that's because earlier on in life, education system or whatever got into people and they feared creativity. And so now their mind became more creative in their fears. But in the work environment, if you were actually pushed to be more creative and allowed that, and you could actually apply some things to maybe try things out, and you have a little bit of an opportunity to do that. Some companies, they have their processes set up, and that, you know, it works for them, it has worked for them, and that's great. But if they want to go to the next level, they can't remain where they are. They have to do something different. Pull something out of the line, work on it in a different fashion, and then put it in at a different location, or, you know, whatever it is. You know, it all made sense when they were initially doing it, but now they have the ability to be creative about it because they have a system that already works. How can you refine it and make it more successful? Because when we talk about having the experience of a trial and error, you know, people, you know, you have failures and stuff like that, you already have something that's a success. So being able to refine it is a lot easier. And one of the other things that I would suggest to a company, let's say you're in more of an office setting where you're not really creating the widget, but you're trying to be more effective, and is trying to understand how you are distracting yourself. Because people, for whatever reason, they are leery to get started on something, or they're slow to do it because they want something to be perfect. And perfection has a shelf life. And if you talk about technology, you know, what's the newest, latest, greatest thing now? Everybody thinks that's perfect. 6 months from now, it's not. And it has to do with perspective of what you think is perfect. And I heard a saying once that I'll always repeat, that C product gets a paycheck, whereas A product doesn't ever get anything.
Interesting.
And that's because if you look at a process that's working, at least it's producing. If you're waiting for it to be perfect, it's not producing anything.
Oh, I got you. That makes sense. And yeah, productivity is a key that is really blends in nicely to the corporate culture as well, because if you think about it, you know, expectations have a lot to do with it. But what I'm going to say right now is part of this is setting goals, and goals that really are consistent with the overall mission of the company. Part of that is monitoring your goals, evaluating your goals, and adjusting your goals. And I don't think many companies have a continuous system to really engage in these goal setting.
Well, let's do a flip. You know, this is one of these concepts I say. Let's look at something in the reverse, the way that a company would normally look at. Typically, near the end of the year is when they go through reviews, right? And there's all these questionnaires and stuff like that. But if you can make a list that was useful on a day-to-day basis, a questionnaire that you could ask yourself, And when you first get into your position or work or whatever it is that you're doing, you pull this sheet out or you mentally go through this, and you do a checklist going through this list. And you say, you know, the relative to my goal, you know, write down your goal, you have your goals clear. And, you know, some positions you have something that is easy to create metrics, something to measure. Others, it's a little less tangible. But the idea here is what is the outcome that you want? What's the intention that you're trying to create? And bringing yourself to awareness of it from the beginning and onset of when you start. That helps you focus in on track. Instead of just saying, well, I did this yesterday, I'm going to pick up where I was yesterday. Well, there's time. You've rested. Can you look back where you were yesterday? Can you have that outside point of view saying, well, how am I going to serve myself, as if you're coming in and you're an outside agent working for yourself, looking at what you did the previous day?
Well, that totally makes sense. And to elaborate on that is, if you look at it, yeah, I'm a big fan of looking at, in your let's say starting in the morning, what is it you hope to accomplish that day? So specific things are what I would call key success factors in relation to the company, to their.
But if everyone has a dollar and you exchange that dollar, then you have, you know, you have 20 people, that's 20 ideas. It's the same thing with the steps in working towards efficiency. If one person just makes one step towards an efficiency, it's not something you can see in your own personal life necessarily as much. But if everyone's doing that company-wide, and you have, you know, 20 employees or 100 employees, that's 20 steps or 100 steps that you weren't taking before that you're currently taking now. And that's why over a shorter period of time, you can see a lot more evidence of it.
And as Tony Robbins says, is when is now a good time?
Now is always now.
Exactly. So you focus on that particular point. So many people say, I'll do it tomorrow. They just blew off a day. But cumulatively, it really adds up. Now, there's a skill set that I think is really important that people should learn in terms of productivity. You've seen it, I've seen it, and as a CPA, I see it all the time. Some people get lost in the detail. You have to have the ability to look globally at times and go specific at times. If you just go too global, you're going to miss specifics. If you get lost in the specifics, time can run out on you. The productivity could be horrible because you're not looking at boundaries. You're just stuck, like in a video game.
So this goes back to looking at management, whether it's personal management or management over a group of people. And that's where I call the yes-no concept, where you're thrown into the polls. If you're yes, 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 you're the manager who is the micromanager. They're trying to make everybody happy. And they're trying to make everyone so happy they can't get any focus. Then you got the micromanager who's got the no, 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 no aspect. They're saying no to everybody. They got to control everything. But just like when you breathe, there's a pause in, out, and everything. But most everything, all the action happens in between. And so if you can recognize when it's a value to say yes and when it's to say no, and that has to do with being able to take that observation you're saying and saying, what's really valuable in what we're talking about here relative to what I'm doing? And if you're in line with that questionnaire, so to speak, that we were talking about, that you design that suits your job and your function and your goals, then you can better orient yourself to paying attention to that. If your mindset is to seek it out, then in any opportunity, it will bring itself to evidence to you. If you're not looking for it consciously, it could be right there, but you won't pay attention to it.
I totally agree. And this is so valuable. I mean, we're just touching very generally on these topics, and this is wonderful for any CEO or leader, owner of a business. So we'll take our final break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about something that might wrap this whole thing up called thinking outside the box. This might be the key to everything.
As I like to say, thinking outside the cubicle.
Yeah, and that, exactly. That's really cool, too. This is a show called Get On To It, starring Don Williams, all about really improving yourself to your highest potential. And the topic today, business introspection. We'll be right back. Like I don't care, baby, by the way. And welcome back again. You are listening to Breakthrough Thinking Broadcasting Network's Get Unto It, starring Don Williams. We're talking about business introspection. The first segment was corporate culture. You don't want to miss that one. You can replay this, and I'll show you how in 1 second. Team building was our second segment. Productivity was our third, and now we're going to get on to thinking outside the box. Go to breakradioshow.com, go to archives, go to Get On To It to hear a replay of this, because this is a great educational piece, and if you implement this and study and learn, you can substantially improve your business and the lives of all your employees, families, kids. The trickle-down effect, there's no question about it. Don, thinking outside the box is the next topic, and to me, this wraps it up, because if you can't think outside the box and really know the what I call the three levels of thinking, you know what you know what you don't know, and you know that you don't know what you don't know. You got to play in the third level. That will bring in new information, new skills, new beliefs, new everything to get you on your way.
Well, here's an interesting flip it that I have found to be very useful.
What's a flip it?
A flip it.
Oh, a flip it.
Yeah, a very it's flippantly flip it.
Okay.
All right, there you go. And the analogy I'll use, and just explain the flip it real quick, is if you think of a coin toss, you have the heads and tails, right? Well, if the head's up and the tail's down, it's sort of like the person sitting down and they're, you know, consciously working on something. But if you flip it around and the head's down and the tail's up, your head's in the ground and the tail's up in the air.
I have different sayings for something like that.
And basically, it just means you're completely got the head in the ground. You're not seeing what's going on. So here's a flip it. Everyone is going into a position that they've been doing for several years or whatnot. But what if you walked into your position as if you were, I'll use an example, like an alien to the company, like from a totally different point of view. Can you think back to when you first entered that company and how you saw the role you're going to fill versus the way you were filling it? You were directed towards certain things, but because you were new, you were still open to looking at things in different ways, and you'd ask questions. Now you don't necessarily ask any questions anymore. You don't look at how you can be effective in your role in a way that was to get more of an attention from whoever hired you. If you remember that, it was like, I got to prove myself, this, and that. Where if you think out of the box and think of it, how can I use that creative ability within me to prove myself to myself? Build that self-esteem up and say, you know, this isn't just another day at work. This is another day where I get to see what I'm capable of. And look at it from that perspective. That's a great way of being able to perceive that, looking outside of the box or outside the cubicle, as I say, that fits trying to accomplish that. That's a good place to start the why.
Yeah, I agree. I think a lot of people do, like, they get settled in, they get familiar, and they get comfortable. And maybe being comfortable is not such a good thing, because if you get comfortable, you might just not progress as quickly or at all. And maybe if you take the position that life is about reaching in your full potential, that's thinking outside the box, too. Why you're here.
Yeah. And, you know, of course, you know, certain spaces don't allow you to move around as much as others. But for those who have that opportunity, I recognized I did this when I was younger as a kid. And if you can do this without an expense or a great amount of time, but you know, it's always good to reorganize, right? And to go through things. But if you can reorganize, at the same point, you shift around your space. Like I would, you know, in my personal space, I'd change my whole layout of my bedroom, you know, where my bed was, my desk was, and everything.
Was it a feng shui type of situation?
No, it was just so that I could change the environment so I could look at it differently.
Well, I've heard of people, I think it was Warren Buffett, I believe, and I might be mistaken, but I believe it was here where I read where he would take a different route home from work every day, just remain fresh and new. You know, just to understand, not this routine thing, almost on automatic pilot, right? Right. We've all done that driving, and next thing you know, wow, I just went 10 miles. I don't remember one thing. In fact, I just passed where I was 30 miles ago.
Yes.
And I think that can happen to us, and we sort of get hypnotized or mesmerized or something that prevents us from being conscious.
And one of the things I would say that would also help people is importance versus urgent.
Good point.
Because you can't make what is important to someone else your urgent. You have to be able to focus in on what's urgent for what you need to take care of and put in a sense of priority. This idea of multitasking is great when you're working on things that you can work to a certain point and then you have to wait and pass it off to somebody else. But that's the one thing that they really don't explain when they're saying this wonderful idea. And the one thing that I would suggest is if you have something you have to accomplish, write down a list of two or three things. It doesn't need to be a huge list. And focus on that one thing and complete it through. How many times have you been able to do that? And that's when we get into sort of, you know, what distractions you have with the efficiency and stuff like this. So if your normal routine is to always check your email when you get in, or whatever. Is there a way that you can make that work so that you don't check it when you get in and you spend an hour, you know, getting yourself up to a certain level before you even do that? And the way I would say this is it's something like how someone does exercise when they first get up in the morning. They have that completed and they go and do their normal task. You reorient so that you get a win in. You get that extra hour in before you do the emails or whatever, and you have something that you've accomplished. You've got that time in, and now you can look at what you're running up against and be able to weigh it in versus what's important versus urgent versus just going in there and letting the emails direct your whole day.
You know, that's a really good point. And going in conjunction with what you said, you know, with thinking outside the box, I mean, it really takes a commitment to continuous improvement, number one. And number two, attitude training. That's really important. If you don't have an I can attitude, you're not going to be thinking outside the box for a long time.
Well, I mean, that's how I like my last name, Will Williams. And I say it's the Will I am.
Yeah. Hey, that's pretty nice. You got a good name. What's mine? Oh, I won't even say. But that is so critical, the I can. So many people defeat themselves before they even try.
Right.
And if you defeat yourself and negotiate against yourself before you even try, saying, hey, that's not going to work, well, how do you really know it's not going
to
work?
Well, that's the thing. You have to try no matter what. And making time to try new things, it's really a good thing. People find themselves in a rut.
Yeah.
They get comfortable. And if you can start to do this in your own personal life, especially like, and I'll use an example, it's outside of business, but it's related to business. If you are in a relationship, that's another form of business, your personal business versus your, but those are still.
Well, that's interesting that you said that's another form of business. In several relationships, yeah, there might be a business relationship.
Right, right. And the way that I state that is when you first met somebody in a romantic relationship, it was all exciting because it was all new. So take an hour out of the week and do something new every week.
Yeah.
The same thing you can do inside the company and say, this is my, you know, I'm going to do 15 minutes every day or whatever it is, and I'm going to try something new. Fiddle around with something. Give this as my exploratory period. And give yourself, one, permission to do it.
Yeah.
Two, recognize the value in doing it. You know, if you have a success or failure, you've learned something either one way or the other, and you can learn something more about yourself and how maybe you can create something more for the company didn't see.
You know, I like what you said. I think that's really a great thing, even though it might be just 15 minutes, something new, because it breaks you out into thinking outside the box. Now, some of the obstacles I guess we should talk about. You know, stress is one, and stress comes from, it could be financially, it could be not feeling well, it could be the stress of time. And I always say, you know, the quality of time is much greater than the quantity of time. And people like to rush and get things done more than likely you make more mistakes that way. But I think with the right attitude, and there are techniques in NLP, neuro-linguistic programming, to slow down time in your mind. Mm-hmm. And if you could slow it down, you'll see things differently. That's thinking outside the box. So time management is not just when to do things. It's how to think about things and how to think about time.
Well, I've always looked at time as the balance between two points.
Yeah.
And if you see that as a balance, how can you shift yourself to align with the balance you're trying to create and connect with? And that's where you focus in, like, you know, if you get really metaphysical, it's the moments between the moments.
Yeah, yeah.
And it basically what they're saying is drop out of the idea of worrying about time and just focus on that one thing. And that's largely what it has to do with time management, is being able to focus in on one thing and say no to everything else and being able to pay attention to it. Because if you're able to focus in on one thing and not have all the chatter going on in your mind, what you think you need to do, what you should be doing, what somebody wants you to do, and you can get it done a lot faster, and it's not rushed.
I totally agree. When you're burning off energy about worry and stress, time will expand, and you'll just not be able to focus that well. There's a great book called The Power of Now, Eckhart Tolle, talking about time, and where there's really no such thing as time. It's a man-made invention, mm-hmm. pretty much. And if you could look at it differently and view time differently, I think that will increase not only thinking outside the box, but your productivity, your team building, and how you affect the corporate.
Well, that's why I used the idea of balance. You know, you started something, it's going to be finished as long as you follow it through. You're not concerned with how long it's going to take. You're concerned with doing it correctly and following through with it. Usually, if you put the amount of energy into doing it versus thinking about it, you can do it in a fraction of the time. And people waste time because they spend so much time overthinking. The simple part is to actually do it.
No question about it. And can you believe, Don, this wraps up the show. This was the fastest hour ever. See, time had no impact on us. We could go hours and hours, days and months and years on this topic. This is a great topic. We talked about
for sure
a business introspection, corporate culture was the first segment, team building, second segment, productivity, third segment. We just wrapped up thinking outside the box. There's a lot more topics just on time alone. How to think about it could be a good one. But this is Get On To It. Hear a replay of this on BreakRadioShow.com. Under Archives, go to Get On To It. And hear all the great stuff from Don Williams. This is fantastic. Don, it's been another pleasure.
Yeah, well, anyone who wants to get connected with me, go to GetOnToIt.com. GETON, the number 2, IT.com. And we'll figure out how we can help you get out of your own way so that you can reach your higher potential. Take your place where you are now as zero, and we'll make you a hero.
Oh, I love that. Nice poet, by the way. And we'll see you next month, same time, same station, first Thursday of the month at 11 o'clock. Have a great day.